here, sharing her grief with strangers. The room seemed to be closing in on her, and though the air conditioning was low enough to keep some people in their coats, Lena was sweating.
"Hey,"
Frank said, cupping her elbow in his hand. Lena was surprised at the gesture but did not pull away. She felt overwhelmed with relief to talk to someone familiar.
"You hear what happened?"
Frank asked, shooting Hank a sideways look. Lena felt a blush of embarrassment at the look, knowing that Frank had pegged her uncle for a punk. Cops could smell it from a mile away.
"No,"
Lena said, escorting Frank to the side of the room.
"Will Harris,"
he began in a low tone.
"Somebody threw a rock through his front window."
"Why?" Lena asked, already guessing the answer. Frank shrugged.
"I don't know."
He looked over his shoulder.
"I mean, Matt."
Again the shrug came.
"He was with me all day. I don't know."
Lena pulled him into the hallway so they would not have to whisper.
"You think Matt did something?" "Matt or Pete Wayne," he said. "I mean, they're the only two I can think of."
"Maybe somebody in the lodge?" Frank bristled, like she knew he would. She might as well have accused the Pope of fiddling with a 10-year-old. Lena asked, "What about Brad?" Frank gave her a look.
"Yeah," Lena said, "I know what you mean."
She could not say without a shadow of a doubt that Brad Stevens might not like Will Harris, but she knew that Brad would cut off his own arm before he broke the law. Once, Brad had backtracked 3 miles just to pick up some trash that he had accidentally blown out of his car window.
"I was thinking of talking to Pete later on," Frank said.
Without thinking, Lena checked the time. It was a little after 5:30. Pete would probably be home.
"Can we take your car?"
she asked, thinking she could leave hers for Hank to take home. Frank looked back into the parlor.
"You want to leave your sister's wake?"
he asked, not hiding his shock. Lena stared at the floor, knowing she should feel ashamed at the very least. The fact was, she had to get out of this room with these strangers before grief took hold, and she became too paralyzed to do anything but sit in her room crying. Frank said,
"Meet me around the side in 10 minutes.
Lena walked back into the room, looking for Hank. He was standing by Nan Thomas, his arm around her shoulder. She felt herself bristle, seeing them together like that. He certainly had no problem comforting a complete stranger, no matter that his own flesh and blood was not 10 feet away from him alone. Lena went back into the hallway to get her coat. She was slipping it on when she felt someone helping her. She was surprised to see Richard Carter behind her.
"I wanted to tell you," he said, his tone hushed, "that I'm sorry about your sister."
"Thanks," she managed.
"I appreciate that."
"Have you found anything about that other girl?"
"Matthews?" she asked before she could catch herself. Lena had grown up in a small town, but she was still amazed at how quickly word got around.
"That Gordon," Richard said, giving a dramatic shudder. "He's not a very nice boy."
"Yeah," Lena mumbled, trying to move him along.
"Listen, thanks for coming tonight."
His smile was slight. He realized she was moving him along, but obviously he did not want to make it easy for her. He said,
"I really enjoyed working with your sister. She was very good to me."
Lena shifted from one foot to another, not wanting to give him the impression that she was looking for a long conversation. She knew Frank well enough to know he wouldn't wait for very long.
"She enjoyed working with you too, Richard," Lena offered.
"Did she say that?"
he asked, obviously pleased.
"I mean, I know she respected my work, but did she say that?"
"Yes," Lena said, "all the time."
She picked out Hank in the crowd. He still had his arm around Nan. She pointed them out to Richard.
"Ask my uncle. He was just talking about it the other day."
"Really?"
Richard said, putting his hands up to his mouth.
"Yes,"
Lena answered,
taking her car keys out of her coat pocket. "Listen, can you give these to my uncle?" He stared at the keys without taking them. This was one of the reasons Sybil had gotten along so well with Richard. She wasn't able to see the condescending looks he gave. In fact, Sybil seemed to have the patience of Job where Richard Carter was concerned. Lena knew for a fact that Sybil had helped him get out of academic probation on more than one occasion. "Richard?" she asked, dangling the keys. "Sure," he finally said, holding out his hand. Lena dropped the keys onto his palm. She waited until he had taken a few steps away, then scooted out the side door. Frank was waiting in his car, the lights out. "Sorry I'm late," Lena said, getting in. She wrinkled her nose when she smelled smoke. Technically, Frank was not allowed to smoke around her when they were on the job, but she kept her mouth shut since he was doing her a favor letting her ride along.
"Those college people," Frank said.
He took a drag on the cigarette, then chucked it out the window.
"Sorry," he offered.
"It's okay," Lena said. She felt odd being dressed up and in Frank's car. For some reason, she was reminded of her first date. Lena was strictly a jeans and t-shirt girl, so putting on a dress was a big deal. She felt awkward wearing heels and hose, and never knew how to sit or where to put her hands. She missed her holster.
"About your sister," Frank began.
Lena let him off the hook. "Yeah, thanks," she said. Night had fallen while Lena was in the funeral home, and the farther away from town they got, the farther away from streetlights and people, the darker it got in the car.
"The thing at old Will's house," Frank began, breaking the silence. "I don't know about that, Lena."
"You think Pete had a hand in it?"
"I don't know," Frank repeated. "Will worked for his daddy maybe 20 years before Pete came along. That's something you shouldn't forget."
He reached for a cigarette, then stopped himself.
"I just don't know."
Lena waited, but there was nothing more. She kept her hands in her lap, staring ahead as Frank drove out of town. They crossed the city line and were well into Madison before Frank slowed his car, taking a hard right onto a dead-end street. Pete Wayne's brick ranch house was modest, much like the man. His car, a 1996 Dodge with red tape where the taillights used to be, was parked in the driveway at an angle. Frank pulled the car up to the curb and cut the headlights. He gave a nervous laugh.
"You all dressed up like that, I feel like I should get your door for you." "Don't you dare," Lena countered, grabbing the handle in case he was serious. "Hold on," Frank said, putting his hand on Lena's arm.
She thought he was pushing the joke, but something about his tone made her look up. Pete was coming out of his house, a baseball bat in his hand. Frank said,
"Stay here."
"The hell I will," Lena said, opening her door before he could stop her. The dome light came on in the car, and Pete Wayne looked up. Frank said,
"Good going, kid."
Lena bit back her anger over the nickname. She walked up the driveway behind Frank, feeling stupid in the high heels and long dress. Pete watched them coming, keeping the bat at his side.
"Frank?"
he asked.
"What's up?" "Mind if we come in for a second?" Frank asked, adding, "Brother."
Pete gave a nervous sideways look to Lena. She knew these lodge people had their own special code of language. What exactly Frank meant by calling Pete his brother, she had no idea. For all she knew, Frank was telling Pete to hit Lena with the bat.
Pete said, "I was just going out." "I see that," Frank said, eyeing the bat. "Little late for practice, ain't it?"
Pete handled the bat nervously.
"I was just putting it into the van. Got a little nervous about what happened at the diner," he said. "Thought I'd keep it behind the bar." "Let's go inside," Frank said, not giving Pete a chance to respond.
He walked up the front steps and stood at the front door, waiting for Pete to catch up, hovering over the other man as he fumbled with his keys in the lock. Lena followed them.
By the time they reached the kitchen, Pete was noticeably on guard. His hand was wrapped so tightly around the bat that his knuckles had turned white.
"What's the problem here?" Pete asked, directing his question toward Frank. "Will Harris had a problem this afternoon," Frank said. "Somebody threw a rock into his front window." "That's too bad," Pete answered, his voice flat. "I gotta say, Pete," Frank said, "I think you did it."
Pete laughed uncomfortably.
"You think I got time to run down and toss a brick through that boy's window? I've got a business to run. I don't have time to take a crap most days, let alone take a trip."
Lena said, "What makes you think it was a brick?" Pete swallowed hard.
"Just a guess."
Frank grabbed the bat out of his hand.
"Will's worked for your family for nearly 50 years.
"I know that,"
Pete said, taking a step back.
"There were times when your daddy had to pay him with food instead of money because he couldn't afford help otherwise."
Frank weighted the bat in his hand.
"You remember that, Pete? You remember when the base closed and y'all almost went under?"
Pete's face flushed.
"Course I remember that." "Let me tell you something, boy," Frank said, putting the tip of the bat squarely against Pete's chest. "You listen to me good when I tell you this. Will Harris didn't touch that girl."
"You know that for a fact,"
Pete countered. Lena put her hand on the bat, bringing it down. She stepped in front of Pete, looking him in the eye. She said,
"I do."
Pete broke eye contact first. His eyes went to the floor, and his posture took on a nervous stance. He shook his head, letting out a heavy breath. When he looked up, it was Frank he spoke to.
"We've got to talk."
Chapter 13. Eddie Linton had purchased acreage around the lake when he first started making money from his plumbing business. He also owned 6 houses near the college that he rented out to students, as well as an apartment complex over in Madison that he was always threatening to sell. When Sarah moved back to Grant from Atlanta, she had refused to live in her parents' house. Something about moving back home, living in her old room, smacked of defeat to Sarah. And at the time, she was feeling beaten down enough without the constant reminder that she did not even have a space of her own. She had rented one of her father's houses her first year back, then started working weekends at the hospital in Augusta in order to save up a down payment for her own place. She had fallen in love with her house the first time the realtor showed her through. Built in a shotgun style, the house's front door lined up directly with the back door. Off to the sides of the long hallway were 2 bedrooms, a bathroom, and a small den on the right, with a living room, dining room, another bathroom, and a kitchen on the left. Of course, she would have bought the house if it had been a shack, because the view to the lake was phenomenal from the deck off the back. Her bedroom took full advantage of this. A large picture window, flanked by 3 windows that opened out on either side. On days like today, she could see clear across, nearly to the university. Some days, when the weather was right, Sarah took her boat into the school dock and walked to work. Sarah opened the window in her bedroom so she could hear Jeb's boat when he got to the dock. Last night had seen another soft rain and a cool breeze was coming off the lake. She studied her appearance in the mirror on the back of the door. She had chosen a wraparound skirt with a small floral print and a tight black lycra shirt that fell just below her navel. Already she had put her hair up, then let it back down. She was in the process of pinning it back up when she heard a boat at the dock. She slipped on her sandals and grabbed 2 glasses and a bottle of wine before walking out the back door.
"Ahoy,"
Jeb said, tossing her a rope. He tucked his hands into his orange life vest, affecting what Sarah supposed he thought was a jaunty sailor look.
"Ahoy yourself," Sarah answered, kneeling by the bollard.
She put the wine and glasses down on the dock as she tied off the line.
"Still haven't learned to swim, have you?"
"Both my parents were terrified of the water," he explained.
They never got around to it, and it's not like I grew up near water.
Good point, she said. Having grown up on a lake, swimming came second nature to Sarah. She could not imagine not knowing how.
You should learn, she said, especially since you're boating.
Don't need to know how, Jeb said, patting the boat as he would a dog. I can walk on water with this baby.
She stood up, admiring the boat. Nice.
Real babe magnet, he joked, unhooking the vest.
She knew he was teasing, but the boat, painted a deep, metallic black, was sleek and sexy, with a dangerous look about it, unlike Jeb McGuire in his bulky orange life jacket.
Jeb said, I'll tell you what, Sarah. If you ever looked at me the way you're looking at my boat right now, I'd have to marry you.
She laughed at herself, saying, It's a very pretty boat. He pulled out a picnic basket and said,
I'd offer to take you for a ride, but it's a bit nippy on the water.
We can sit here, she said, indicating the chairs and table on the edge of the dock. Do I need to get silverware or anything?
Jeb smiled. I know you better than that, Sarah Linton.
He opened the picnic basket and took out silverware and napkins. He had also had the foresight to bring plates and glasses. Sarah tried not to lick her lips when he pulled out fried chicken, mashed potatoes, peas, corn, and biscuits. Are you trying to seduce me? She asked. Jeb stopped, his hand on a tub of gravy.
Is it working?
The dogs barked, and all Sarah could think was, thank God for small favors. She turned back to the house, saying, They never bark. I'll just go check.
You want me to come, too?
Sarah was about to tell him no, but changed her mind. She had not been making that part up about the dogs. Billy and Bob had barked exactly twice since she had rescued them from the racing track in Ebro. Once, when Sarah had accidentally stepped on Bob's tail, and once when a bird had flown down the chimney into the living room. She felt Jeb's hand at her back as they walked up the yard toward the house. The sun was just dipping down over the roofline, and she shielded her eyes with her hand, recognizing Brad Stevens standing at the edge of the driveway.
Hey, Brad, Jeb said.
The patrolman gave a curt nod to Jeb, but his eyes were on Sarah. Brad? She asked.
Ma'am.
Brad took off his hat.
The chief's been shot.
Sarah had never really pushed the Z3 Roadster. Even when she drove it back from Atlanta, the speedometer had stayed at a steady 75 the entire way. She was doing 90 as she drove the back route to the Grant Medical Center. The 10-minute drive seemed to take hours, and by the time Sarah made the turn into the hospital, her palms were sweating on the wheel. She pulled into a handicapped space at the side of the building so she would not block the ambulance doors. Sarah was running by the time she reached the emergency room.
What happened? She asked Lena Adams, who was standing in front of the admitting desk.
Lena opened her mouth to answer, but Sarah ran past her into the hallway. She checked each room as she went by, finally finding Jeffrey in the third exam room. Ellen Bray did not seem surprised to see Sarah in the room. The nurse was putting a blood pressure cuff around his arm when Sarah walked in. Sarah put her hand on Jeffrey's forehead. His eyes opened slightly, but he did not seem to register her presence.
What happened? She asked.
Ellen handed Sarah the chart, saying,
Buckshot to his leg. Nothing serious, or they would have taken him to Augusta.
Sarah glanced down at the chart. Her eyes wouldn't focus. She couldn't even make out the columns.
Sarah, Ellen said, her voice filled with compassion.
She had worked in the Augusta emergency room most of her career. She was in semi-retirement now, supplementing her pension by working nights at the Grant Medical Center. Sarah had worked with her years ago, and the two women had a solid professional relationship built on mutual respect.
Ellen said, He's fine, really. The Demerol should knock him out soon. Most of his pain is coming from hair digging around in his leg.
Hair? Sarah asked, feeling a little relief for the first time in the last 20 minutes. Her cousin, Hareton, was a general practitioner who sometimes filled in at the hospital. Is he here? Ellen nodded,
pumping the cuff's bladder. She held up her finger for silence. Jeffrey stirred, then slowly opened his eyes. When he recognized Sarah, a slight smile crept across his lips. Ellen released the blood pressure cuff, saying, 145 over 92. Sarah frowned, looking back at Jeffrey's chart. The words finally started to make sense.
I'll go fetch Dr. Earnshaw, Ellen said.
Thanks, Sarah said, flipping the chart open. When did you start on Corrig? She asked. How long have you had high blood pressure? Jeffrey smiled slyly.
Since you walked into the room.
Sarah skimmed the chart. 50 milligrams a day. You just switched from captopril? Why did you stop? She got the answer in the chart. Non-productive cough prompted change, she read aloud. Hare walked into the room saying,
That's common with ACE inhibitors.
Sarah ignored her cousin as he put his arm around her shoulders. She asked Jeffrey, Who are you seeing for this?
Linley, Jeffrey answered.
Did you tell him about your father? Sarah snapped the chart closed. I can't believe he didn't give you an inhaler. What's your cholesterol like?
Sarah. Hare snatched the chart from her hands. Shut up.
Jeffrey laughed.
Thank you.
Sarah crossed her arms, anger welling up. She had been so worried on the drive over, expecting the worst, and now that she was here, Jeffrey was fine. She was inordinately relieved that he was okay, but for some reason she was feeling tricked by her emotions.
Look it, Hare said, popping an x-ray into the light box mounted on the wall. He gasped audibly, saying, Oh my God, that's the worst I've ever seen.
Sarah cut him with a look, turning the x-ray right side up.
Oh, thank God, Hare sighed dramatically.
When he saw she wasn't enjoying his sideshow, he frowned. The thing that made Sarah both love and hate her cousin was he seldom took things very seriously.
Hare said, Missed his artery, missed his bone, cut right through here on the inside.
He gave her a reassuring smile.
Nothing bad at all.
Sarah ignored the evaluation, leaning closer to double-check Hare's findings. Aside from the fact that her relationship with her cousin had always been riddled with fierce competition, she wanted to make sure for herself that nothing had been missed.
Let's turn you over on your left side, Hare suggested to Jeffrey, waiting for Sarah to help.
Sarah kept Jeffrey's injured right leg stable as they turned him, offering, This should help bring your blood pressure down a little. Are you due for your medication tonight?
Jeffrey supplied, I'm late on a few doses.
Late? Sarah felt her own blood pressure rise. Are you an idiot?
I ran out, Jeffrey mumbled.
Ran out? You're within walking distance of the pharmacy. She leveled a deep frown at Jeffrey. What were you thinking?
Sarah, Jeffrey interrupted, did you come all the way over here to yell at me?
She did not have an answer.
Hare suggested, Maybe she can give you a second opinion on whether or not you should go home tonight.
Ah, Jeffrey's eyes crinkled with a smile.
Well, since you're giving a second opinion, Dr. Linton, I've been experiencing some tenderness in my groin. Do you mind taking a look?
Sarah offered a tight smile. I could do a rectal exam.
It's about time you got your turn.
Jesus, Hare groaned.
I'm gonna leave you two lovebirds alone.
Thanks, Hare, Jeffrey called. Hare tossed a wave over his shoulder as he left the room. So? Sarah began, crossing her arms. Jeffrey raised an eyebrow.
So?
What happened? Did her husband come home?
Jeffrey laughed, but there was a strained look in his eyes. Close the door.
Sarah did as she was told. What happened? She repeated. Jeffrey put his hand to his eyes.
I don't know. It was so fast.
Sarah took a step closer, taking his hand despite her better judgment.
Will Harris's house was vandalized today.
Will from the diner? Sarah asked. For God's sake, why?
He shrugged.
I guess some people got it into their heads that he was involved with what happened to Sybil Adams.
He wasn't even there when it happened, Sarah answered, not understanding. Why would anyone think that?
I don't know, Sarah. He sighed, dropping his hand. I knew something bad would happen. Too many people are jumping to conclusions. Too many people are pushing this thing out of hand.
Like who?
I don't know, he managed. I was staying at Will's house to make sure he was safe. We were watching a movie when I heard something outside.
He shook his head, as if he still could not believe what had happened.
I got up off the couch to see what was going on, and one of the side windows just exploded like that.
He snapped his fingers.
Next thing I know, I'm on the floor, my legs on fire. Thank God Will was sitting in his chair, or he would have been hit too.
Who did it?
I don't know, he answered, but she could tell from the set of his jaw that he had a good guess.
She was about to question him further when he reached his hand out, resting it on her hip.
You look beautiful.
Sarah felt a small jolt of electricity as his thumb slipped under her shirt, stroking her side. His fingers slipped under the back of her shirt. They were warm against her skin. I had a date, she said, feeling a rush of guilt for leaving Jeb at her house. He had been very understanding, as usual, but she still felt bad about abandoning him. Jeffrey watched her through half-closed eyes. He either did not believe her about the date, or he would not accept that it could have been anything serious.
I love it when your hair is down, he said. Did you know that?
Yeah, she said, putting her hand over his, stopping him, breaking the spell. Why didn't you tell me you have high blood pressure? Jeffrey let his arm drop.
I didn't want to give you one more fault to add to your list.
His smile was a little forced and incongruous with the glassy look in his eyes. Like Sarah, he seldom took anything stronger than aspirin, and the Demerol seemed to be working fast.
Give me your hand, Jeffrey said.
She shook her head, but he persisted, holding his hand out to her.
Hold my hand.
Why should I?
Because you could have seen me at the morgue tonight instead of the hospital.
Sarah bit her lip, fighting back the tears that wanted to come. You're okay now, she said, putting her hand to his cheek. Go to sleep. He closed his eyes. She could tell that he was fighting to stay awake for her benefit.
I don't want to go to sleep,
he said, then fell asleep. Sarah stared at him, watching his chest rise and fall with each breath. She reached out, smoothing his hair back off his forehead, leaving her hand there for a few seconds before putting her palm to his cheek. His beard was coming in, a speckled black against his face and neck. She brushed her fingers lightly along the stubble, smiling at the memories that came. Sleeping, he reminded her of the Jeffrey she had fallen in love with, the man who listened to her talk about her day, the man who opened doors for her and killed spiders and changed the batteries in the smoke detectors. Sarah finally took his hand and kissed it before leaving the room. She took her time walking back up the hallway toward the nurse's station, feeling an overwhelming sense of exhaustion. The clock on the wall showed she had been here an hour, and Sarah realized with a start that she was back on hospital time, where 8 hours went by like 8 seconds.
"He asleep?" Ellen asked.
Sarah leaned her elbows on the counter of the admitting desk. "Yeah," she answered.
"He'll be okay."
Ellen smiled.
"Sure he will." "There you are," Hare said, rubbing Sarah's shoulders. "How's it feel to be in a real hospital with the big doctors?"
Sarah exchanged a look with Ellen. "You'll have to excuse my cousin, Ellen. What he lacks in hair and height, he makes up for by being an asshole."
"Ow," Hare winced, pressing his thumb into Sarah's shoulders. "Want to fill in for me while I run out for a bite to eat?"
"What have we got?" Sarah asked, thinking that going home right now probably was not the best thing for her. Ellen gave a small smile.
"We've got a frequent flyer getting fluorescent light therapy in two."
Sarah laughed out loud. In the obscure language of hospital lingo, Ellen had just informed her that the patient in room 2 was a hypochondriac who had been left to stare at the overhead lights until he felt better.
Microdeckia, Hare concluded. The patient was not playing with a full deck.
What else?
Some kid from the college sleeping off a long one, Ellen said.
Sarah turned to Hare.
I don't know if I can take these complicated cases.
He chucked her under her chin.
There's a girl.
I guess I should go move my car, Sarah said, remembering she had parked in the handicapped spot. As every cop in town knew the car she drove, Sarah doubted she was likely to get a ticket. Still, she wanted to walk outside for some fresh air, take some time to collect her thoughts, before she went back in to check on Jeffrey.
How is he? Lena asked as soon as Sarah walked into the waiting room. Sarah looked around, surprised to see the room was empty but for Lena.
We kept it off the radio, Lena provided. This kind of thing... She let her voice trail off.
This kind of thing what? Sarah prompted. Am I missing something here, Lena?
Lena looked away nervously.
You know who did it, huh? Sarah asked.
Lena shook her head.
I'm not sure.
That's where Frank is? Taking care of business? She shrugged.
I don't know. He dropped me off here.
Pretty easy not to know what's going on when you don't bother to ask, Sarah snapped. I guess the fact that Jeffrey could have died tonight is lost on you.
I know that.
Yeah? Sarah demanded. Who was watching his back, Lena?
Lena started to answer, but she turned away before saying anything.
Sarah slammed the emergency room doors open with her hands, feeling anger well up. She knew exactly what was going on here. Frank knew who was responsible for shooting Jeffrey, but he was keeping his mouth closed out of some obscure sense of loyalty, probably to Matt Hogan. What was going through Lena's mind, Sarah could not begin to guess. After everything Jeffrey had done for her, to have Lena turn her back on him like this was inexcusable. Sarah took a deep breath, trying to calm herself as she walked around to the side of the hospital. Jeffrey could have been killed. The glass could have sliced through his femoral artery, and he could have bled to death. For that matter, the original shot could have gone into his chest instead of through the window. Sarah wondered what Frank and Lena would be doing now if Jeffrey had died. Probably drawing straws to see who got his desk.
Oh, God.
Sarah stopped short at the side of her car. Lying on the hood of Sarah's car was a nude, young woman with her arms spread out. She was on her back, her feet crossed at the ankle in an almost casual pose. Sarah's first instinct was to look up to see if the woman had jumped from one of the windows. There were no windows on this side of the two-story building, though, and the hood of the car showed no signs of impact. Sarah took 3 quick steps to the car, checking the woman's pulse. A fast, hard beat came under Sarah's fingers, and she muttered a small prayer before running back into the hospital.
Lena!
Lena jumped up, fists clenched, as if she expected Sarah to come over and start a fight.
Get a stretcher, Sarah ordered.
When Lena did not move, Sarah yelled,
Now!
Sarah jogged back to the woman, half expecting her to be gone. Everything was moving in slow time for Sarah, even the wind in her hair.
Ma'am?
Sarah called to the woman, raising her voice loud enough to be heard across town. The woman did not respond.
Ma'am!
Sarah tried again, still nothing. Sarah assessed the body, seeing no immediate signs of trauma. The skin was pink and ruddy, very hot to the touch despite the night cold. With her arms out and feet crossed as they were, the woman could have been sleeping. In the bright light, Sarah could make out crusted blood around the palms of the woman's hands. Sarah lifted one of the hands to examine it, and the arm moved awkwardly to the side. There was an obvious dislocation at the shoulder. Sarah looked back at the woman's face and was startled to notice that a silver piece of duct tape had been wrapped around her mouth. Sarah couldn't remember if the tape had been there before she had gone back into the hospital. Surely she would have noticed it before. Something like a taped mouth wasn't easily overlooked,
especially when the tape was at least 2 inches across by 4 inches long and dark silver. For just a brief second, Sarah felt paralyzed. But Lena Adams' voice brought her back to reality. "It's Julia Matthews," Lena said, but her voice sounded far away to Sarah. "Sarah?" Hare asked, walking quickly over to the car. His mouth dropped open at the sight of the nude woman. "Okay, okay," Sarah mumbled, trying to get herself calm. She shot Hare a look of sheer panic, which he returned in kind. Hare was used to an occasional overdose or heart attack, nothing like this. As if to remind them both of where they were, the woman's body began to convulse. "She's going to be sick," Sarah said, picking at the edge of the tape. Without pausing, she ripped off the tape. In one swift motion, she rolled the woman onto her side and held her head down as she vomited in fits and starts. A sour smell came, almost like bad cider or beer, and Sarah had to turn away to take a breath. "It's okay," Sarah whispered. She stroked the woman's dirty brown hair back behind her ear, remembering that she had done the same thing for Sybil just 2 days ago. The vomiting stopped abruptly, and Sarah gently rolled her back over, keeping her head steady. Hare's tone was urgent. "She's not breathing." Sarah cleared the woman's mouth with her finger, surprised to feel some resistance. After a few seconds of digging, she pulled out a folded driver's license, which she handed to a surprised Lena Adams. "Breathing's back," Hare said, relief flooding his voice. Sarah rubbed her fingers clean on her skirt, wishing she'd had on a pair of gloves before she had stuck her fingers into the woman's mouth. Ellen jogged to the car, her jaw set as she angled a long stretcher in front of her. Without words, she stepped to the woman's feet, waiting for Sarah's signal. Sarah counted to three, then they both moved the woman onto the bed. Sarah felt a sick taste in her mouth as they did this, and for a few seconds, she saw herself on the bed instead of the woman. Sarah's mouth went dry, and she felt a numbness overcome her. "Ready," Hare said, strapping the woman to the bed. Sarah trotted beside the gurney, holding onto the young woman's hand. The time it took them to get back into the hospital was interminable. The bed seemed to be rolling through glue as they entered the first trauma room. The woman made small murmurs of pain with each jolt of the bed. Briefly, Sarah latched onto the woman's fear. 12 years had passed since Sarah had practiced emergency medicine, and she needed to concentrate on the tasks at hand. In her head, Sarah went over what she'd learned her first day in the ER. As if to prompt Sarah, the woman started wheezing, then gasping for air. The first priority was to establish an airway. "Jesus," Sarah hissed as she opened the woman's mouth. Under the bright lights of the exam room, Sarah could see that her top front teeth had been knocked out, obviously within the last few days. Again, Sarah felt herself freezing up. She tried to shake this off. Sarah had to think of this woman as a patient or they would both be in trouble. In seconds, Sarah had intubated the woman, careful with the tape so as not to do further damage to the skin around the mouth. Sarah fought the urge to cringe as the ventilator kicked in. The sound almost sickened her. "She's got good sounds," Hare reported, handing Sarah a stethoscope.
"Sarah," Ellen said, "I can't get a peripheral."
"She's dehydrated," Sarah reported, as she tried to find a vein on the woman's other arm. "We should drop a central anyway." Sarah held her hand out for the needle, but one was not immediately placed in her hand.
"I'll get it from two," Ellen said, then left the room.
Sarah turned back to the young woman on the bed. There did not seem to be any bruises or cuts on her body, other than the marks on her hands and feet. Her skin was warm to the touch, which could point to any number of things. Sarah did not want to jump to conclusions, but already the similarities between Sybil Adams and the woman in front of her were going through her mind. They were both petite women. They both had dark brown hair. Sarah checked the woman's pupils. "Dilated," she said, because the last time she'd done something like this, the rule had been to call out your findings. She exhaled slowly, noticing for the first time that Hare and Lena were in the room.
"What's her name?" Sarah asked.
"Julia Matthews," Lena provided.
"We were looking for her at the school. She's been missing for a couple of days."
Hare glanced at the monitor.
Pulse ox is falling.
Sarah checked the ventilator. FiO2 is 30%. Bump it up a little.
What's that smell? Lena interrupted.
Sarah sniffed the woman's body.
Clorox? She asked.
Lena caught another whiff.
Bleach, she confirmed.
Hare nodded as well. Sarah examined the woman's skin carefully. There were lines of superficial scrapes all along the body. Sarah noticed for the first time that the woman's pubic hair had been shaved off. From the lack of growth, Sarah guessed she had been shaved in the last day or so. Sarah said, "She's been scrubbed clean." Sarah smelled the woman's mouth but did not pick up the strong scent that usually comes from ingesting bleach. Sarah had seen some rawness in the back of the throat when she'd tubed the woman, but nothing out of the ordinary. Obviously, the woman had been given a drug similar to, if not actually, belladonna. Her skin was so hot to the touch that Sarah could feel it through her gloves. Ellen entered the room. Sarah watched the nurse as she opened the central line kit on one of the trays. Ellen's hands didn't seem as steady as they usually did. This scared Sarah more than anything else. Sarah held her breath as she jabbed the 3-inch needle into the woman's jugular. The needle, called an introducer, would act as a funnel for 3 separate IV ports. When they found out what kind of drug the woman had been given, Sarah would use one of the extra ports to help counteract the effects. Ellen stood back from the patient, waiting for Sarah's orders. Sarah rattled off the tests as she flushed the ports with heparin solution to keep them from clotting. Blood gases, tox screen, LFT, CBC, Chem-27, go ahead and pull for a coag panel while you're at it. Sarah paused. Dip her urine stat. I want to know what's going on before I do anything else. Something's keeping her knocked out. I think I know what it is, but I need to be sure before we start treatment.
All right, Ellen answered.
Sarah checked for positive blood return, then flushed the lines again. Normal saline wide open. Ellen did as she was told, adjusting the IV. Do you have a portable X-ray? I'll need to make sure I did this right. Sarah said, indicating the internal jugular line. Plus, I need a chest, a flat of the abdomen, and a look at her shoulder. Ellen said, I'll get it from down the hall after I draw the blood work. Also check for GHB, roofies. Sarah spoke as she secured the dressing around the needle. We'll need to do a rape kit.
Rape?
Lena questioned, stepping forward.
Yes, Sarah answered, her tone sharp. Why else would someone do this to her?
Lena's mouth worked, but no answer came. She had obviously kept this case separate from her sister's up until that point. Lena's eyes locked onto the young woman, and she stood at the foot of the bed, her body ramrod straight. Sarah was reminded of the night Lena had come to the morgue to see Sybil Adams. The young detective's mouth was set in that same angry line.
She seems stable, Ellen offered, more to herself than anyone else.
Sarah watched as the nurse used a small syringe to draw blood from the radial artery. Sarah rubbed her own wrist, knowing how painful the procedure could be. She leaned against the bed, her hands on Julia Matthews' arm, trying to somehow convey that she was safe now. Hare brought her back with a gentle,
"Sarah?"
"Hmm?" Sarah was startled. They were all looking at her. She turned to Lena. Can you help Ellen with the portable? She asked, trying to use a firm voice.
Yeah,
Lena returned, giving Sarah an odd look. Ellen filled the last syringe.
It's down the hall, she told Lena.
Sarah heard them leave, but she kept her eyes on Julia Matthews. Sarah's vision tunneled, and for the second time she felt herself on the gurney, saw a doctor leaning over her, taking her pulse. Checking her vitals.
Sarah?
Hare was looking at the woman's hands, and Sarah was reminded of the marks she had first seen in the parking lot. Both palms were punctured through the center. Sarah glanced down at the woman's feet, noting that they too had been punctured in the same way. She bent to examine the wounds, which were clotting rapidly. Specks of rust added color to the dried black blood. The palm has been pierced through, Sarah offered. She looked under the woman's fingernails, recognizing thin slivers of wood pressed under the nails. Wood, she reported, wondering why someone would take the time to scrub the victim down with bleach in order to remove physical traces, yet leave slivers of wood under the nails. It did not make sense. And then to leave her arranged on the car in such a way. Sarah worked all of this out in her head, and her stomach responded to the obvious conclusion with a slight pitch. She closed her eyes, picturing the woman as she had been when Sarah first found her. Legs crossed at the ankles, arms at 90-degree angles from the body. The woman had been crucified. "Those are puncture wounds, right?" Hare said. Sarah nodded, not taking her eyes off the woman. Her body was well-nourished and her skin had been taken care of. There were no needle marks to indicate prolonged drug use. Sarah stopped in her tracks, realizing she'd assessed the woman as if she were at the morgue rather than the hospital. As if sensing this, the heart monitor went into failure, the shrill scream of the machine putting Sarah on alert. "No," Sarah hissed as she leaned over the woman, starting compressions. "Hair, bagger." He fumbled around in the drawers for the bag. Within seconds, he was squeezing air into the woman's lungs. "She's in VTAC," he warned. "Slow," Sarah said, wincing as she felt one of the patient's ribs crack under her hands. She kept her eyes on Hare, willing him to cooperate. "One, two, squeeze. Quick and hard. Keep it calm."
"Okay, okay," Hare mumbled, concentrating on squeezing the bag.
Despite the great press given CPR, it was merely a stopgap measure. CPR was the act of physically forcing the heart to circulate blood into the brain, and very rarely could this be done manually as effectively as a healthy heart performing the task on its own. If Sarah stopped, so would the heart. It was a time-buying procedure until something else could be done. Lena, obviously alerted by the shrieking monitor, ran back into the room. "What happened?" "She crashed," Sarah said, feeling a slight sense of relief as she spotted Ellen in the hallway. "Amp of Epi," she ordered. Sarah watched impatiently as Ellen popped open a box of Epi and put the syringe together.
"Jeesh,"
Lena cringed as Sarah administered the drug straight into the woman's heart. Hare's voice rose a few octaves. "She's in V-fib." With one hand, Ellen took the paddles off the cart behind her, charging the defibrillator with the other. 200, Sarah ordered. The woman's body jumped into the air as Sarah electrocuted her. Sarah watched the monitor, frowning when there was no corresponding reaction. Sarah shocked her two more times with the same response. "Lidocaine," she ordered, just as Ellen popped another box. Sarah administered the drug, keeping an eye on the monitor. "Flatline," Hare reported. "Again," Sarah reached for the paddles. 300, she ordered. Again, she shocked the woman. Again, there was no response. Sarah felt a cold sweat come over her. "Epi." The sound of the box popping open was like a needle in Sarah's ear. She took the syringe, pushing the adrenaline directly into the woman's heart one more time. They all waited. "Flatline," Hare reported. "Let's go to 360. For the fifth time, a charge went through the woman's body with no response. "God damn it, God damn it," Sarah muttered, resuming compressions. "Time," she called. Hare glanced at the clock. 12 minutes. It had seemed like 2 seconds to Sarah. Lena must have sensed from Hare's tone of voice where he was going with this. She whispered under her breath. "Don't let her die, please don't let her die."
"She's in prolonged asystole, Sarah," Hare said.
He was telling her that it was too late. It was time to stop. Time to let go. Sarah narrowed her eyes at him. She turned to Ellen. "I'm going to crack her chest." Hare shook his head, saying, "Sarah, we don't have the capabilities here." Sarah ignored him. She felt down the woman's ribs, cringing as she made contact with the one she had broken. When Sarah's fingers reached the bottom of the diaphragm, she took a scalpel and sliced a 6-inch opening into the upper abdomen. She slipped her hand into the incision, reaching under the ribcage and into the woman's chest. She kept her eyes closed, blocking out the hospital as she massaged the woman's heart. The monitor showed false hope as Sarah squeezed, manually circulating the woman's blood. A tingling came to her fingers, and in her ears she could hear a slight, piercing tone. Nothing else mattered as she waited for the heart to respond. It was like squeezing a small balloon filled with warm water. Only this balloon was life. Sarah stopped. She counted to 5 seconds. 8. Then up to 12, before being rewarded with spontaneous beeps from the heart monitor. Hare asked, "Is that her or you?" "Her," Sarah offered, letting her hand slip out. "Start a lidocaine drip."
"Jesus Christ," Lena muttered, hand to her own chest. "I can't believe you just did that."
Sarah snapped off her gloves, not answering. The room was quiet but for the beeps of the heart monitor and the in and out of the ventilator.
"So," Sarah said, "we'll do a dark field for syphilis and a Gram stain for gonorrhea."
Sarah felt her face flush over this. "I'm sure a condom was used, but make a note to follow up in a few days for pregnancy." Sarah was conscious of a waver in her voice that she hoped Ellen and Lena did not pick up. Hare was another matter. She could hear what he was thinking without even looking at him. He seemed to sense her nervousness and tried to make light of it.
"Good God, Sarah. That's the sloppiest incision I've ever seen."
Sarah licked her lips, willing her own heart to calm.
"I was trying not to upstage you."
"Prima donna,"
Hare offered, wiping perspiration from his forehead with a pad of surgical gauze.
"Jesus Christ."
He laughed uncomfortably.
"We don't see much of this around here,"
Ellen said as she packed surgical towels into the incision to control the bleeding until it was closed.
"I can call Larry Headley over in Augusta. He lives about 15 minutes from here."
"I would appreciate that," Sarah said, taking another pair of gloves from the box on the wall.
"You okay?"
Hare asked, his tone casual. His eyes showed his concern. "Fine," Sarah answered, checking the IV. She told Lena, "I guess you can find Frank." Lena had the decency to look embarrassed.
"I'll go see."
She left the room, her head down. Sarah waited until she was gone, then asked Hare, "Can you take a look at her hands?" Hare was silent as he examined the woman's palms, feeling the bone structure. After a few minutes, he said,
"This is interesting."
Sarah asked, "What's that?"
"Missed all the bones,"
Hare answered, rotating the wrist. When he got to the shoulder, he stopped.
"Dislocated," he said.
Sarah crossed her arms, suddenly cold. "From trying to get away?" Hare frowned.
"Do you realize how much force it would take to dislocate your shoulder blade?"
He shook his head, unable to accept it.
"You'd pass out from the pain before you'd..."
"Do you realize how terrifying it is to be raped?" Sarah's gaze bored right into him. Pain registered in his expression.
"I'm sorry, honey. Are you okay?"
Tears stung the back of her eyes, and Sarah had to fight to keep her voice even. "Check her hips, please. I want you to do a full report." He did as he was told, giving Sarah a curt nod after the examination.
"I'm thinking there's some ligature damage in the hip. Here. I need to do this when she's awake. It's fairly subjective."
Sarah asked, "Can you tell anything else?"
"All the bones in her hands and feet were missed. Her feet were speared between the second and third cuneiform and the navicular. That's very precise. Whoever did it knew what he was doing."
He paused, looking down at the floor to regain his composure.
"I don't see why someone would do this."
"Look at this," Sarah said, pointing to the skin around the woman's ankles. They both had angry black bruises around their circumference. Obviously, there was a secondary restraint to hold the feet down. Sarah picked up the woman's hand, noticing a fresh scar at the wrist. The other had the same mark. Julia Matthews had attempted suicide at some point during the last month. The scar was a white line slashing vertically across her small wrist. A dark bruise put the old wound in stark relief. Sarah did not bring this to Hare's attention. Instead, she offered, "It looks to me like a band was used, probably leather." "I'm not following." "The piercing was symbolic."
"Of?"
"Crucifixion, I would imagine." Sarah put the woman's hand back by her side. Sarah rubbed her arms, fighting the chill in the room. She walked over, opening drawers, looking for a sheet to cover the young woman. "If I had to guess, I would say that the hands and feet were nailed back from the body."
"Crucifixion?" Hare dismissed this. "That's not how Jesus was crucified. The feet would be together."
Sarah snapped. "Nobody wanted to rape Jesus, Hare. Of course her legs were spread apart." Hare's Adam's apple bobbed as he swallowed this.
"Is this what you do at the morgue?"
She shrugged, looking for a sheet.
"Christ, you've got more balls than I do," Hare said, breathing heavily.
Sarah tucked the sheet around the young woman, trying to comfort her.
"I don't know about that," she said.
Hare asked,
"What about her mouth?"
"Her front teeth were knocked out, I imagine, to facilitate fellatio." His voice rose in shock.
"What?" "It's more common than you think," Sarah told him.
"The Clorox removes trace evidence. I imagine he shaved her so we couldn't do a comb for his pubic hair. Even during normal sex, hairs are torn out. He could have shaved her for the sexual thrill, though. A lot of attackers like to think of their victims as children. Shaving the pubic hair would fuel that fantasy." Hare shook his head, overcome with the nastiness of the crime.
"What kind of animal would do this?"
Sarah stroked back the woman's hair. "A methodical one."
"Do you think she knew him?"
"No," Sarah answered, never more sure of anything in her life. She walked over to the counter where Lena had left the evidence bag. "Why did he give us her driver's license?" "He doesn't care if we know who she is." Hare's tone was incredulous.
"How can you be so sure?"
"He left." Sarah tried to catch her breath. "He left her in front of the hospital where anybody could have seen him dump her." She put her hand over her eyes for just a second, wishing that she could hide. She had to get out of this room. That much she was certain of. Hare seemed to be trying to read her expression. His face, normally open and kind, took on a stern look.
"She was raped in a hospital."
"Outside a hospital."
"Her mouth was taped shut."
"I know that."
"By someone who obviously has some kind of religious fixation."
"Right."
"Sarah."
She held up her hand for silence as Lena returned. Lena said,
"Frank's on his way."
Thursday. Chapter 14. Jeffrey blinked his eyes several times, forcing himself not to go back to sleep. For a few seconds, he did not know where he was, but a quick glance around the room reminded him of what had happened last night. He looked over at the window, his eyes taking their time coming into focus. He saw Sarah. He leaned his head back into the pillow, letting out a long sigh.
"Remember when I used to brush your hair?"
"Sir?"
Jeffrey opened his eyes.
"Lena?"
She seemed embarrassed as she walked over to the bed.
"Yeah. I thought you were..."
He waved this off.
"Never mind."
Jeffrey forced himself to sit up in bed, despite the pain shooting through his right leg. He felt stiff and drugged, but he knew if he did not stay upright, the rest of the day would be blown.
"Hand me my pants," he said.
"They had to throw them away," she reminded him.
"Remember what happened?"
Jeffrey grumbled an answer as he put his feet on the floor. Standing hurt like a hot knife in his leg, but he could live with the pain.
"Can you find me some pants?" he asked.
Lena left the room, and Jeffrey leaned against the wall so that he wouldn't sit back down. He tried to remember what had happened the night before. Part of him didn't want to deal with it. There was enough on his plate trying to find out who had killed Sybil Adams. "How are these?" Lena asked, tossing him a pair of scrubs.
"Great,"
Jeffrey said, waiting for her to turn around. He slipped them on, suppressing a groan as he lifted his leg.
"We got a full day ahead of us," he said. "Nick Shelton is coming in at 10 with one of his drug guys. We'll get a rundown on the